Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life, because that is what it's all about. I want you to think about your day, not your diet. And I'm trying to start my Instagram live and it is not working. Oh well. Okay. So if you would like to join me here today, the number in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind and what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or overeating, compulsive eating, is not food. Food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem. The real problem is what's eating at you. So I want to share an article that I just wrote for a new website called Weight Loss Hope. It's a subsidiary of Eating Disorder Hope, and I think it's going to have some great content, and it's going to be really helpful for a lot of people. And my article is called How to Stop Stress Eating. So recently, a caller to my radio show, and Nicole, if you're listening, I think you know who this caller is. Recently, a caller to my weekly radio show asked about willpower. After dieting all week, she completely lost control at a Greek restaurant, and she asked, how could she get more willpower? So binging, overeating, or difficulty sticking to a healthy eating plan is not a matter of willpower. And here's how to take back control. First of all, stop dieting. Stop dieting. There are a lot of studies that show that dieting does not result in long-term weight loss. In fact, dieting actually contributes to weight gain. Yes, weight gain. Dieting makes you gain weight in the long run, not lose it. Diets fail because the anticipation of deprivation, knowing you can't eat what you want, makes you want it more. And additionally, if you're trying not to have unhealthy foods like pizza or pasta or ice cream, you got food on the mind. You got food on your brain, which puts the focus on what you're eating instead of why. So this radio caller was on a diet of what she called clean food that she found boring. The Greek restaurant's cuisine contrasted with the blandness of her diet. She couldn't get enough because she had not eaten anything yummy for a while. And when food choices are delicious, it's easier to make healthy choices and halt the binge diet cycle. Or actually, the diet binge cycle is more like how it goes. The second thing you need to do is differentiate between physical and emotional hunger. The next time you reach for an unhealthy food, ask yourself if your hunger is physical or emotional. So here are some signs of physical hunger, that gurgling, growling, loud stomach that you get when you're hungry, feeling lightheaded, getting a headache. And also, when you're physically hungry, any food will do. Emotional hunger is different. Here are some signs of emotional hunger. A specific food sounds good or looks good, and you want to reward yourself. Oh, I deserve that. I worked hard. That's going to be my treat. Or you want to feel emotionally better, and you think that you're going to feel better after you eat whatever it is that you eat. So to stop eating as a way to alleviate stress, manage boredom, or for distraction, it is essential to identify and meet the underlying emotional need or want or whatever's going on emotionally. So think about what you'd say to a stressed-out friend. Probably not, hey, I know how to make you feel better. Have some Ben and Jerry's. Our responses to our friends usually involve reassurance, understanding, and compassion. And it's vital to also be a friend with yourself when you're upset, because when you give yourself comfort words, you will feel better and you won't eat for comfort. So the key to stop stress eating is to address what's eating at you instead of focusing on what you're eating. Eliminate deprivation, choose yummy, palatable foods, and eat only when you're physically hungry, not to soothe your emotions. These steps eliminate stress eating so you can lose weight naturally, and it really does work. So I guess we're having some problems, technical problems, with both Instagram Live and Facebook Live, so we're going to do it old school today. You can't see me. You can just hear me. All right. So I got an email recently from a woman named Tabitha, and Tabitha says, Dr. Nina, I love your show, and I've been listening to you ever since you had the Win the Diet War podcast. I remember an episode where you were talking about someone who is also named Tabitha. Can you tell me which one that was? I'd love to listen to it again. Well, thanks, Tabitha. And by the way, the other Tabitha really wasn't named Tabitha. I change everybody's names for confidentiality purposes. But actually, that was episode number 8 of Win the Diet War with Dr. Nina, which is still available on Apple Podcasts. And to save you the trouble of going back and listening to it again, and to let everyone else know about Tabitha, I'm going to share what I talked about in that episode. So I had gone to a birthday party, and when it was time for cake, Tabitha said, ooh, that cake looks really good, but I shouldn't eat it. I really shouldn't go anywhere near that cake. I mean, summer's almost here. There is no way I am getting into a bikini if I've still got this disgusting muffin top, and that she started poking her stomach and looking disgusted. And she said, I lose weight, I gain it back. What if nothing ever changes? What if I'm stuck like this for the rest of my life? She sounded very discouraged. She looked very unhappy. And then she said, whatever, I might as well have some cake. And she did. 2 pieces, not that I was watching or counting. Okay, I was, because she had just made such a big deal out of it. And now she's having 2 pieces of cake. And later, Tabitha told me she was disgusted with herself. How do I know that? She said to me, I am disgusted with myself. I had 2 pieces of cake. It wasn't even that good. What is my problem? What is wrong with me? Why can't I be normal? Does any of this sound familiar? So Tabitha sabotaged herself in a number of different ways. Let me break it down for you. So one way of sabotaging yourself is using the word should. As in Tabitha saying, oh, I shouldn't eat that. I really shouldn't eat that. I had a college professor who used to say, don't should on yourself. He thought that was very clever, which it was. And you should really take it to heart. I mean, how many times have you said to yourself, I shouldn't do that. I should be better at this. I should get a better job. I shouldn't eat that cake. I should be somewhere else in my life by now. Even if you say, I should be happier. That implies that somehow you're not where you're supposed to be, where you should be. And often we speak to ourselves in second person as if someone else is talking to us. You shouldn't have eaten that. You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't want that. You should do better. When you speak to yourself in the second person, ask yourself, whose voice does that sound like? Is it familiar? Maybe other people talk to you that way and you internalized their view of you. Or, stay with me on this one, your view of their view of you. The word should causes you to direct anxiety, sadness, anger, and distress towards yourself. And these feelings can be so powerful that you are likely to cope with food. So instead of I shouldn't have that cake, I shouldn't whatever, fill in the blank, ask yourself, what do I want? Why do I want it? What am I feeling? What's going on with me right now? Be interested in your thoughts and your feelings instead of being judgmental. A second way of sabotaging yourself is calling yourself names and being mean to yourself. Now, when Tabitha called herself disgusting, that was mean. Can you imagine saying that to one of your friends? You really shouldn't eat that cake because you're disgusting when you do. And if you do eat that cake, I'm going to be even more disgusted with you than I already am. No, I don't think you'd think that. It wouldn't occur to you to think that. But somehow, towards ourselves, we can be meaner to ourselves than, anyone else could possibly be to us, or that we could be to anyone else. So again, I'm guessing you wouldn't tell anyone else that they were disgusting, but maybe you find it easy to say those things to yourself. Words are powerful. When you're disgusted with yourself or what you eat, ask yourself, how do you feel when you talk to yourself that way? When you say, as Tabitha did, what's wrong with me? What's my problem? What's that like? Is it a nice feeling, all warm and cozy? No, it's not. It's a terrible feeling. It's awful. It makes you feel bad. And when you feel bad and food reliably provides distraction or comfort, you can get stuck in a pattern of being mean to yourself, feeling bad, eating for comfort, which leads to being mean to yourself, and the cycle continues. So you can stop the cycle by learning to soothe yourself with words, speaking kindly to yourself, and being a friend to yourself instead of being so nasty. And it's not just the words that are important. Tone has a lot to do with it. So a third way of sabotaging yourself, which also Tabitha did, is the tone you use towards yourself and about yourself. Actually, I remember not long ago, there were I have a support group, and I asked everyone in my support group to say something supportive about themselves. And we do it every week now, but when we first started, they had a really hard time, and they would say it very grudgingly, like, you know, I'm going to be okay. I'm fine the way I am. Said it like a question. This is a painful time. Things will get better. It's okay to feel upset, right? Totally didn't believe a word they said. There was nothing wrong with what they were saying, but there was a lot to be desired in terms of how they were saying it. They were not comforting. They were not soothing. They were not helpful. This is what soothing sounds like. I'm going to be okay. I am going to be okay. I am fine the way I am. This is a painful time, but things will get better. And it's okay to feel upset. Same words, totally different feeling. See the difference? So when you talk to yourself the way you talk to your friends and your family, assuming that you're nice to them, most of the time you're going to feel a lot better. And when you feel better, you don't need food as a distraction. And here is a caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Nicole. How are you?
Hi, Nicole.
I was just listening to what you were saying about, like, self-talk and tone and, yeah, kind of just being a friend to yourself. I want to say something supportive to myself.
That would be great. Let's hear some practice words.
Okay, let's see. I'm beautiful. I accept my body. I accept who I am. And I am enough. And my worth and, my self-worth is not from a number on a scale or how I look, but it's from all the other good qualities I have. And I
like
love
what?
Myself.
Like what? Like, let's hear some of these qualities. Come on, let's hear these qualities.
Being compassionate and loving and a good friend and a good person. And yeah, is that enough?
Look at how difficult. I want to put, first of all, I got to give you a little bit.
Yay!
Of, you get a little yay for going to a place of naming some of your qualities that have nothing to do with appearance. But notice how easy it is for you to denigrate yourself and put yourself down when it has to do with your body, and how hard it is for you to acknowledge who you are.
You're so right. It's crazy. My God.
Yep.
Holy moly. I need to work on that.
You absolutely, I think you do, and everybody does. We all need to work on that.
You know, it's making me realize how obsessed I am with how I look on the outside and how everybody else looks on the outside. I kind of found that not only do I judge myself about how I look and if I gain 1 or 2, even 1 or 2 pounds or like whatever, like it's that, like I'm bloated, it's that time of the month, whatever. Like I also judge other people, and it's so, I would like to work on. I'm so obsessed with how I look on the outside and how other people look on the outside, but I need to be more concerned with the inside.
Amen to that.
I am a deep person. I have substance, okay? But I'm just like obsessed with looks. What's wrong with me?
Oh, I think, can we delete what's wrong with me? Those four, let's just go back.
Nothing's wrong with me. I just need to reprogram my brain. I've been programmed this way, and I will reprogram my brain to be more loving and kind to myself and to others around me.
I think that is a yes. See, doesn't that feel more empowering than what's wrong with me? What's wrong? It's what's wrong with society. It's what's wrong with our culture. It's what's wrong with the kind of messages we get that make, you know, women only feel good if they like look like adolescent girls and have to, you know, look like they're 20 years old when they're 80. I mean, look, you know, we're all sort of victim to this culture, but we can choose what to believe of it and what to dispute and what to deny, and we can choose to do something differently.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, like, if I gain 1 or 2 pounds, or if I don't want to say I ate bad, because I know eating is not good or bad, but
good.
I didn't eat the way I would like to, like, I'll just punish myself and be, like, self-destructive by just, like, overeating, by being bad to myself. But I have to learn, like, I will learn to love myself and be compassionate to myself. I'm compassionate to other people. Why can't I be compassionate and gentle with myself? So I will do that.
That is a good question. So first of all, eating something is not a crime. So it's like you're very split. You're like, ooh, I want to eat that. That sounds good. So you eat it. And then you get mad. Another part of you gets mad at yourself for eating it, and then punishes you by eating more.
Yeah, that's it. It's guilty and then destructive.
Instead of, okay, I didn't want to eat that, but really? Let's look at this. What's so terrible? I mean, there are no good food or bad food. It's just a spectrum of health. Why am I setting myself up for this? Why do I think that was bad?
Yeah.
Bad is, you know, lying to Congress. Bad is, you know, shooting someone on Fifth Avenue. That's bad. Just saying.
Yeah.
That's bad.
That's so funny.
But eating a piece of damn cake is not a crime, okay? If it were, we would all be in jail.
Yeah, I guess I use the term bad because I think, like, it's bad in terms of weight loss or weight maintenance. Like, it's the wrong food to eat if you're trying to sustain a certain figure.
No. Dieting makes you gain weight in the long run. To lose weight, you got to eat like a person who doesn't need to lose weight. When you eat like a person who doesn't need to lose weight, they have a couple bites of cake and go, okay, that was good. Or, oh, this is good. I'll have all of it. And then they don't stress out. And then they don't eat 2 more pieces of cake because they feel bad because they ate the first piece of cake. Right?
You're so right.
You have this idea of you have to deprive yourself to lose weight. The last 5 pounds you talk about a lot. And I am here to tell you, how has that worked for you so far?
If I starve myself for like 2 days, I can maybe lose 2 pounds.
And then what happens?
Oh, it comes back.
Right? Oh, exactly.
Like a normal human.
Right. Okay. So are you in agreement with me that the way that you're doing it, in other words, dieting, is not working for you? Right?
When I stick to it, it's working for me when I stick, like if I stick to it and I'm super strict and mean to myself.
Yet that you can't stick to it.
Myself, yeah, it works.
No, it doesn't work because eventually you can't stick to it.
Oh, it comes back.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can't sustain it.
It's unsustainable. Yeah, okay. So if you eat like a person who doesn't want to lose weight, you will lose weight. Because then you're in a cycle. You're in a deprivation overeating cycle or a deprivation binging cycle. And that just keeps you, not only at the scale doesn't budge, but it keeps you feeling bad about yourself. It keeps you feeling miserable.
Yeah.
And you don't want to feel miserable, do you? Like, if anyone else was following you around telling you bad things, you'd be like, get out of here. Go away. Leave me alone.
Yeah. So I'm going to eat like a person who doesn't need to lose weight. I really don't need to lose weight, though. I just, like, want to lose weight because I think that if I'm a certain image, if I look a certain way, certain things will happen. I don't know. That even sounds crazy.
Well,
it's fine.
That is an illusion. That is an illusion. Wouldn't it be amazing if all we had to do to get what we wanted was to lose weight? Then we could lose. We can use our bodies to get other people to treat us the way we want to be treated. Oh, that boyfriend broke up with me. I'll just lose 10 pounds and get him back. That guy's not interested in me. I'll lose weight. I'll get him back. This is a fallacy.
It is. It's honestly making me think, like, why do I even want to be 5 pounds thinner? Why? What do I think is going to happen that's different than now?
Yeah, why don't you consider that a moment? What is going to be different?
I don't know. Maybe I think that I will get that, like, that guy that I don't think I can get now. But why?
But why?
Like, it doesn't even make sense. It makes no sense.
You know what?
It's a fallacy. It makes no sense.
It is. Nicole, I got to jump on another call, but I want you to think about, I want you to, this person has called like three times, wait, on call, has called like three
take
times.
It,
and oh no, they went away. They went away. It's okay.
Oh, did it go away? Okay.
But
I have a question. I didn't even get to my question.
What is
but
your
I'm
question?
Gonna save it.
Okay. You're going to save it?
I don't know. Do you want me to save it or ask it? It's about coffee.
Save it. I'm not going to be here next week, but I will be here in two weeks. Save me the coffee question and we will talk about it. But in the meantime, think about what it is that you think is going to be different. You know, if you lose 5 pounds, let's challenge that idea.
Okay. I will let that simmer and marinate and we'll talk in 2 weeks.
I look forward to it. Talk to you then.
Thank you, Dr. Nina.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your advice.
Thank
you. Okay, bye.
Bye. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Brian. You've been very persistent. I saw you call a couple of times. How can I help you?
Well, I actually don't have a question this time around. I have more of just an observation that hopefully will be of some comfort or just, you know, FYI to the female callers and listeners who come to your show and probably come to you in your private practice and, you know, go to your webinars and read your books. And this just kind of comes from, you know, an unreconstructed male who is still aware of how society, you know, on Instagram and, you know, just throughout the internet and advertising kind of makes women feel about their bodies and makes them feel that if they want to be considered attractive or desirable or, you know, of value, that they have to look a certain way. And the standard that's set for the way they're supposed to look kind of just doesn't exist in nature. It only exists after Photoshop and retouching and starvation diets and you know, just physical attributes that I think there's pressure on them that this is what I should look like if I want to be happy and if I want to be sexy and if I want to be attractive in whatever way you would think to somebody who I'm interested in. And I guess I just wanted to say, because I'm just aware of the constant barrage of those images and that kind of societal pressure. I don't know any guy, honestly, who thinks that the zenith of what makes a woman attractive is that they look like a swizzle stick, that they're so thin they look unhealthy.
Wait a
minute. I just don't know any guy who thinks that way. We at least my guy friends and I, if there's an attractive physical quality, leaving aside that obviously it's about way more than that, it's about sense of humor and sensibility about life and just personality and, you know, and just your thoughts and views and emotions about things. But on the physical part, which is a part of it, we like women who look like women, who look real and normal and don't look like, that the only way they are able to maintain the shape that they're in is by just like deprivation and misery. That's just not a look that anybody I know values. So I guess all I wanted to say is if there are women who listen and who write you and attend your presentations and read your books, if in any way, shape, or form, what other people think about their bodies is a part of the equation that leads to them having their own feelings about their bodies, take that part out, because it has nothing to do with what I think the advertising industry and Instagram would have you believe you're supposed to look like. It just doesn't.
I cannot tell you how happy I am to hear this and to have a guy calling and giving the perspective, especially after, you know, just talking to Nicole, who's like, well, maybe a guy will like me better if I'm thinner. And what you're saying, and by the way, I just got a message from someone who said, and women like men for who they are too, not just what they look like. It goes both ways. Exactly. I think the idea that men are interested in women because they're thinner is really cast men in a very shallow light. Like, really, you're going to like someone because they weigh that much? If a guy is interested in you right. because you look, as you put it, like a swizzle stick. What is a swizzle stick?
They're those like those thin straw-looking plastic things that you use to stir your drink.
Okay. I was like, I think I know what a swizzle stick is, but I'm not totally sure. Yeah. So men don't like skinny.
We can go with like the little green stopper sticks that you get at Starbucks.
I'm with you. That,
you know, it's sort of like the spindle thin body type that shouldn't exist in nature except if something went wrong. And I'm not trying to put down, you know, anybody who is naturally built like that. I'm just saying that if that is what people who are not naturally built like that are trying to achieve, and it's based in any way on an assumption that that's what the world expects of them or that's how they'll be valued and thought better of in the world, please stop thinking that way. You're just going to make yourself sick and anxious over nothing.
And thank you. And you're saying that you and your guy friends do not prefer skinny women. Like, we women are kind of conditioned to think men only, and some men like skinny women. I mean, some men do. But you're saying
I'm sure you
and your guy friends, that is not, like, skinny is not, does not equal sexy to you, or super thin or whatever. That does not equal sexy to you.
It does not. It really doesn't. If anything, it's more of, you know, oh, I hope she's feeling okay. You know, because it's more of, I think that there's just a recognition that, you know, and again, I am personally aware of women who, you know, for whatever reason, that is their body type. That's just their natural body type. And I bet body shamed easily. I'm sure people walk up to them and go, are you sick? Are you ill? And so I think the shaming probably goes to them. And somebody who's trying to shame themselves into looking more like that would be shocked to hear that they probably get the same kind of grief, because it's just, there is no perfection that's achievable. The women on Instagram who look incredibly perfect, that's after the 64th selfie take and after a bunch of filters are applied and retouching and shrinkage here and additions there. And it doesn't exist. It's not real. If you're real, if you're a real person with real thoughts and feelings and views on things, that's what's attractive. Just be real.
Wow. That I just want you to take this message, and I want you to call me every week and say the same thing, because people need to hear this. I mean, women need to hear this. And I've heard many men tell me kind of the same thing, like, hey, I resent the culture telling me that I'm supposed to like a certain kind of look in a woman. I don't like women who look like I'm supposed to like. Like, I don't like, Am I making sense? Am I articulating that? A lot of men
they resent
society saying that they what their preferences are in how what is attractive. I hear this so much.
Right.
So I'm glad that you are, and speaking for all your guy friends, saying, "Hey, women, if you think that you're going to be more attractive to someone and be most alluring by being thinner, you're wrong."
It's, yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's true. We get bombarded with images too of what the ideal woman is supposed to look like. This is what you ought to find attractive. And, you know, no surprise, it usually involves, you know, gigantic breast enhancements that honestly, you know, that is not what a woman looks like. That's what a flotation device looks like. And that's not attractive to guys either.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I just have to do this. Oh my God. A flotation device.
Thank you for the cheers.
Yes, no, thank you, Brian. I appreciate you calling. Feel free to call and make this point any time. And I would also probably say the same goes for men. Men get pressure to look a certain way, to have certain kind of muscles. And, you know, now it's not enough to have a six pack. You're supposed to have an eight pack and all of these impossible ideals. And as if that if you know, as if we women will like you guys better if you have more packs in your abs. No. No, to the point of the person who texted me. No. So thank you for making this very, very, very important point.
You are welcome. I hope you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Nicole, I hope you are listening to that, because there you have it. An actual man who's calling to say, hey, I'm not going to like you better because you're thinner. What a concept. Okay, so back to Tabitha. Am I doing on time? Oh, we got lots of time. So if anyone else wants to call, got a question, got a comment on what we're talking about or anything else that is weighing on you or eating at you, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Okay, so a fourth way of sabotaging yourself is what if thinking. Remember how Tabitha said, you know, what if nothing ever changes? What if I'm stuck like this the rest of my life? I think that part was in the original podcast. I might not have said it, but at some point she said, what if nothing ever changes? What if I'm stuck like this the rest of my life? And that's when she went for the cake. What if is about fear. It's about the future. It's about fear of the future, worrying that some kind of punishment, rejection, or deprivation lies ahead. What if I go out with that guy and he turns out to be a jerk? What if I ask someone on a date and she rejects me or he rejects me? What if I ask for a raise and my boss gets mad and says no? What if I make a mistake and get fired? What if I'm making the wrong choice? What if I say the wrong thing? What if thinking gets you upset in the present about something that may never even take place in the future? And when you have here and now emotions about future events, you're going to feel bad. And when you feel bad again, you're more likely to go see what's in the fridge or the pantry or go to the drive-thru or whatever. So in contrast, what is about reality. And when you're grounded in what's actually happening, when you think about what you know to be true, what is reality, you're less likely to feel anxious, less likely to feel worried or upset. So what if equals fear, and it always has to do with something happening in an imagined future. What is reality, and it's what you know to be right here, right now. So think about it. Who are you right now, right here? Who are you? What do you know to be true about yourself? How have you handled difficult situations in the past? Remembering who you are and recognizing your capacity to deal with things will lessen your anxiety, because when you know you can get past difficult situations, you're less afraid of them. A fifth way of sabotaging yourself is using what I call the N-word, normal. The definition of normal means conforming to a standard of what's usual, typical, or expected. To be honest, I have yet to meet a so-called normal person, and I include myself in that. There's such a wide range of what's typical, and that is based on where you live, the culture of your family, your neighborhood, your environment. If you've got full sleeve tattoos, for example, you are not going to be normal in certain suburban environments or in certain law firms. But if you live in a downtown loft where everyone is an artist and everyone has tattoos and it's weird not to have any ink, that's normal. So what's normal? So when you say, I'm not normal or that's not normal, you're putting yourself down. You're saying there's something wrong with you. And when Tabitha said, why can't I be normal? Why can't I be normal around food? What is she saying? So on the surface, she's wondering why she can't be like people who don't worry about cake. But I think on another level, what she really wanted to know was, why does cake have such a hold on me? Why am I so focused on cake? And there are a lot of possible answers to those questions. Maybe Tabitha feels deprived because, you know, if you tell yourself you can't have something, you feel deprived. You want it more. Nicole, are you listening? Maybe she needs more sweetness in her life, and cake is symbolically sweet. Maybe it's easier to focus on problems with cake than other problems. Problems in her marriage, problems at work, problems with her kids. Who knows? The point is, there's a reason she was focused on cake, and she needs to understand that better instead of berating herself for eating cake. Because when you're asking yourself questions, you are more likely to come up with answers. And that is important. It's so crucial. It's what I say constantly. Be curious, not critical. Be compassionate with yourself, not cruel. Because when you do that, you will understand yourself and you will feel better. And when you feel better, you can have the cake or not. It doesn't have such a hold on yourself. Cake is just cake. That's where we want to get. Cake is just cake. I can have it or not have it. Do I want it is really the question. And when you nourish and nurture yourself with words, you stop using food as a substitute. Okay, here is another question from Miranda in Glasgow. Is that how you pronounce it? Glasgow? I once had a teacher from Scotland, and I couldn't understand a word he said all year. I couldn't understand a word he said. I knew it was English. I was fairly certain it was English, but what the actual words were Scottish, and I don't speak Scottish. Okay, so Miranda wants to know if I can go over the what not to say steps to someone who's food policing you. Okay, I would be happy to. So Miranda, first and foremost, this is for all you who are food policers. Do not be the food police. Do not say, do you think you should eat that? Maybe you should make a healthier choice. Do you really need a second portion? In the history of all time, that has never made anyone put down a fork, stop eating, and say, oh my God, you're right. I shouldn't eat this. I never thought of that. I actually do not need this and shouldn't eat it. Thank you for enlightening me. I will not eat it. That has never happened, and that never will. More likely, if you say that to someone, they're going to feel embarrassed. They're going to feel ashamed and guilty and defensive. They could get mad at you. I'd get mad at you. Worse, now they're even more likely to turn to food for comfort since eating soothes, numbs, distracts from uncomfortable feelings. So in other words, being the food police does not make things better. It actually makes things worse. Another example of what not to say, don't be logical. Don't say, you know, if you want to lose weight, you just need to eat a little less. Here's why logic doesn't help. What seems like a weight problem or a food problem is usually not about food at all. Whatever is going on with food is a symptom of the problem. It is a solution to the problem. So in gardening, if you chop off a weed, it grows back. To eliminate a weed permanently, you got to dig out the root. Overeating, binging, stress eating, compulsive eating, it's equivalent of a weed. And to stop, you got to identify why you're doing it. You got to get to that root and figure out why. What is going on that is leading to the weeds, to the behavior? Talking about food or being logical isn't going to help because it's focusing on the wrong thing. Remember, it is not logical. It is psychological. So what if you're trying to be supportive and reassuring and you say, what do you mean you feel fat? You look great. Sorry, but that's another what not to say. Think about it. If you say, oh, you look amazing to someone who doesn't feel amazing, has that person ever said, really? I look amazing? Wow, thank you. I don't feel fat anymore. Again, probably never happened, probably never will. Fat is a substance, not a feeling. So if someone says they feel fat, they may be using the term fat as a sort of a cover-up description for feeling unsatisfied, unhappy, anxious. Something's going on with them because it's preferable to feel fat than to feel an emotion. So telling someone that they look great does not reassure them on some level if they're using fat to express fears or feelings. It's easier to feel fat than it is to feel anxious, scared, vulnerable, or upset. So if they say, I feel so fat, don't say, oh, you look great. Say, what's going on with you? If you weren't fat, feeling fat, you know, what would you be feeling? What emotions? What's going on with you? And maybe you're thinking, hey, I don't say any of those things. I am sensitive to people's feelings. I would never comment on a friend's weight. I would never say anything to my wife or my husband or my partner about their weight or their body. That is wonderful. That is great. But do you talk about other people's weight? Have you ever said something like, that actress who lost all her baby weight in 2 weeks, she looks amazing. Or maybe you've weighed in, if you pardon the expression, on the changing weight of celebrities. You know, Lady Gaga, Christina Aguilera, Al Gore, Chris Christie, their weights are going up and down and people are always talking about it in the media. So maybe you're talking about that. So, you know, commenting on people's appearance, other people's appearance, can actually trigger bad feelings. Because when people feel bad about themselves, say in comparison to a celebrity who lost all her baby weight in 2 weeks, they might also then turn to food to feel better. So they might feel as if they are also under your scrutiny. So all of this leads to feeling bad, which makes them more vulnerable to eating for comfort if they don't have words to make themselves feel better. So I've just covered a lot about what not to say. How am I doing on time? Oh, I have time. I've just covered a lot about what not to say, so now I want to help you find the right words to talk about this issue. And one way to talk to people about this and really anything is what I call the SET communication approach. S for situation, E for emotion, T for translation. So situation, what happened or what was said. Emotion, that's your feelings, not it's just mad, sad, glad, or afraid, some form of that. Translation, which is actually the most important part, that's where you explore the meaning of what's going on. It's your translation or interpretation about the situation. So here is an example. So a friend of mine has been struggling with her weight, and she didn't want to be intimate with her husband with the lights on or undressed, really, because she was embarrassed. She thought that, you know, he would not like the fact that she'd gained weight. And the reality was her husband was totally fine with how she looked, totally attracted to her, but she just couldn't let it go because she just didn't feel like she was thin enough. And finally, after several months, he said, so look, Yes, months. He said, "Are we ever going to have sex or what?" Probably not another what not to say. So here's what he could have said using the situation, emotion, translation approach. He could say, you know, look, when you say you're too fat and you don't want to have sex and you don't like your body situation, I feel rejected and upset emotions. Because it means you don't trust me or my love for you. You think my love is so much based on like your weight. That's the translation. So the situation, again, when you said you were too fat, didn't want to have sex, the emotion, rejected, sad, upset, translation, having to do with trust and love. And this way of communication helps both people recognize the real issue, which in this case is actually not my friend's weight, it's her lack of trust in her husband's love. And once they could talk about that and in a really open and honest way, things could change. She could trust that actually he loves her as she is, not a thinner version of her, and everything kind of got back on track intimacy level wise. Another effective way to communicate is to ask open-ended questions, which are questions that cannot be answered with a yes or a no. And they delve into the person's thoughts, feelings, and experiences. So the classic of all classics is the one therapists ask a lot, you know, how do you feel? Closed questions would be, are you upset? Are you happy? Are you mad at me? Answer with a yes or no, closed questions. So here are some open-ended questions to ask for different kinds of relationships. What do you want more of? By the way, on my second date with my husband, David, one of the first things he said to me on our date was, what are you looking for in a relationship? And I thought that was sexy as hell. He said, what are you looking for in a relationship? And I was just like, wow, this guy is awesome. So we talked about it, you know, and I felt like I got to know him more on that second date than other guys I dated for months. Great, open-ended question. So what do you want more of? What would make you happier? What are your hopes and fears about closeness? What areas of your life are you finding satisfying right now or unsatisfying? What are you feeling right now? What worries you? What can I do to help? In fact, that last one is really, really a good one. What can I do to help? So you get the idea. Notice that all of these questions are about the needs, wants, wishes, hopes, and fears of the other person, not about their behavior with food. And it's also important to give yourself permission to feel your own emotions. Recently, a woman told me she was so helpless. She said she's watching her husband eat his way into a heart attack, as she put it, eat his way into really bad health. And there, it seemed like there was nothing she could do about it. And she said she was mad at him. He wasn't taking care of himself. Then she felt guilty for being mad at him. She tells herself she should be more understanding. Look, feelings are reactions to situations. They're not anything negative. They're not character flaws. They're not evidence of wrongdoing. So if someone you love has an unhealthy relationship to food, you might be worried, helpless, frustrated, angry, bewildered. So instead of judging your reaction, give yourself the right to feel what you feel. Get annoyed, get frustrated, be upset with the person, but allow yourself to be upset with the person's behavior, not with the person. Big difference. Be upset with the behavior, not with the person. Because when you can express how you feel about how this person's relationship to food is impacting you and your relationship while still remaining obviously concerned about them, you're modeling that it's okay to show and express your feelings. And you're showing that emotions can be shared and constructive rather than destructive. So to sum it up, here's what not to say. Don't decide what someone should or should not be eating. Don't restrict food choices or amounts. Don't make comments about food. Don't play nutritionist or dietitian or offered food-related advice. Don't comment on other people's weight or appearance. Here's what to say. Be supportive. Let the person know you are there for them. Ask open-ended questions. Discuss your own feelings with the person that you're worried about in a caring, gentle, and non-judgmental way. And by communicating effectively, you can better understand the person you care about, and you can develop trust and a deeper connection. And that may help your loved one turn to you for comfort and connection instead of to food. So that about wraps it up. That's our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this hour with you. And if you like the show, please take a moment to write a review on Apple Podcasts. You can find it under the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts, or you can listen anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much, and I will see you in 2 weeks. There's going to be a replay next week. Have a great week, everyone. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.